Globe In is a monthly subscription box of fair trade goods from all across the world. Each artisan box is a curated and themed collection of handmade items for the home. They can include everything from ceramic and wooden jewellery chests from India and pedicure exfoliators from Nepal to salt from the Philippines, cocoa from Ghana, and other food items. It is one of the most customizable subscription boxes out there. Each month, Globe In has four or five brand new box themes, and you can choose one of these as your monthly selection. The box includes a booklet which tells you the powerful stories of the artisans who created the products. The products from Globe In aren't the only amazing thing about this company. They're also a verified member of the Fair Trade Federation, which means they pay artisans a reliable wage. So click the link to Globe in my show notes and enter promo code Morbidology for $20 off your first order. Welcome to Morbidology, the podcast. I'm your host, Emily G. Thompson, author of Unsolved Child Murders, Cults Uncovered, and co-author of Unsolved Murders, True Crime Cases Uncovered. Join me weekly as I uncover some of the world's most heinous murders. Not guilty by reason of insanity is a defense that most killers hope and dream of. It is a defense that can sometimes essentially let a killer get away with murder. If found not guilty by reason of insanity, a killer is sent to a psychiatric hospital where they remain until they are considered sane in the eyes of the law, whether that be 1 year or 40 years. It is the defense that stirs the most controversy because of the struggle to align the law with psychiatric knowledge. In 2012, an insanity defense led to the state of Oklahoma updating their definition of insanity. It was approximately 2:30 a.m. on the 5th of December, 2012, when Officer Travis Palmer was responding to a 911 call regarding a dead body with a gunshot wound to the head on Substation Road, which is located south of US 177 in Ada, Oklahoma. Officer Palmer made his way to the scene and discovered the slain body of a teenage boy in a ditch at the side of the road near an abandoned pickup truck. As Officer Palmer was responding, he heard radio traffic about a possible suspect that was spotted walking north on US 177. Responding to the radio traffic, he came across 18-year-old Jared Murray walking on the road. The teenager stood out immediately. He was wearing a black suit, yellow shirt, black trench coat, a black fedora, and black dress shoes. Officer Palmer ordered Jared to the ground and asked him if he had a gun. He responded by telling the officer that the gun was in the pickup truck and that he was the one that they were looking for. "Why would I be looking for you?" said Officer Palmer, to which Jared replied, "'Cause of the guy I shot and put in the ditch on Substation Road."
We actually have the suspect in custody. The suspect has given us information that has incriminated himself.
Jared was subsequently arrested and taken to the Drug and Violent Crimes Task Force office in Shawnee. While under arrest, Officer Palmer had asked Jared how he felt, to which he replied, "It was okay," referring to the murder. When asked if he had any remorse, he replied, "Well, I'm glad I got caught by someone with your high rank, but no, I don't feel any remorse for what I did. During his interview with investigators back at the station, Jared was exceptionally polite, calm, and collected. He certainly didn't elicit the emotions one would expect for somebody who had just been arrested for committing a murder.
My name is Undersheriff J.T. Palmer. Me and you met on the side of Highway 177 in Racine Road at about 3:12 this morning, didn't we?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And at that time, you made a couple of statements to me when I put you down on the ground, and then after we got up, I read your rights to you, correct?
You read my rights before I got up, sir.
Okay. Before you got up off the ground?
Yes, sir.
But you did make a couple of statements.
Yes, sir. I
before
did
I read
statement,
your rights,
sir.
Without me asking you anything.
Yes, sir.
You told me you was a guy that I was trying to find.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And then I read your rights to you.
Yes, sir.
And then rights were you had the right to remain silent.
Then I had the right, sir.
Okay. Anything you say, Ken, will be used in court.
Yes, sir.
You had the right to talk to an attorney, have him present while you'd be in question.
Yes, sir.
And if you couldn't afford to hire one, one would be appointed to represent you.
Yes, sir.
And I asked you then if you wanted to talk to me.
Yes, sir.
And you agreed to talk.
At the time, I said no, but didn't I?
No. I read your rights to you.
But whenever you asked me if I wished to talk with you about it...
You said you didn't know, and then you said...
Yes, yes.
And then you,
yeah, that's right.
And then you said, yes, I've already told you, so
yes.
I might as well. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And at that... And during that talk, do you remember what you told me after I read your Miranda warning to you?
Not word for word, but the effect, yes.
Okay, and what do you remember telling me?
In summation, that I'm guilty, yes.
Of what?
Of murder.
Jared didn't take long before he openly confessed to murdering the teenager found on Substation Road.
Okay, and then how did you murder him?
With a gun. I shot him in the head twice.
Okay.
Three shots were fired, one missed.
And where did you shoot? Where did this happen at?
Around 5 miles north of Asher, Oklahoma, on a side road.
He confessed that he had been planning on murdering somebody for around 3 weeks, but said that he didn't know who to pick as his victim or when to carry the murder out. However, he said that he always knew that he would commit the murder on Substation Road, simply because he knew the area well. The murder victim was identified as 18-year-old Gennaro Sanchez, a student at East Central University, who lived on the same floor as Jared at Pisagi Hall Dormitory. Gennaro had been picked for the victim for one reason alone.
Get to the point where you knew it was going to be him.
That was 3 days prior to the incident.
And why him? All the kids in college here, why him?
I believed that he would have had the least impact, sir.
Impact of on what?
I believed he didn't have many friends, or many close friends, I should rephrase. And as his as he is going missing, his absence would be less notable.
According to Jared, he had decided that Gennaro would be the perfect victim because, as Jared said, he didn't have many friends and therefore wouldn't be missed so quickly. During the interview, Jared explained that he had initially planned on killing Gennaro on Tuesday, but said that when he went to his dorm room, he wasn't there. Later, Jared offered Gennaro $20 to give him a lift to Walmart.
How'd you guys hook up?
I went down to his dorm room and asked if I could be given a ride to Walmart in exchange for $20 gas money.
Okay. And did he agree to that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And did he, in fact, take you to Walmart?
Yes, sir. We got in his pickup truck, and he drove me to Walmart.
And so you're talking about the Walmart in Ada?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And that's a couple miles from the school?
1.7 miles, sir.
1.7 miles?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
After they got into Gennaro's pickup truck, Jared pulled a gun out and ordered him to drive 5 miles north of Asher.
I told him to take me to Ada. Asher.
Asher. And did he say anything?
He panicked. Went to pull out his phone. I yanked the phone out of his hand. And then he panicked some more. Kept telling me not to kill him. To make him feel more comfortable, I unloaded the clip, unloaded the bullet from the chamber, handed them over to him, and that eased his nerves a little. Then I pulled a second clip out of my pocket and set it on my lap.
Okay. And you drove him to, and he drove you?
Yes, sir.
And did you have any conversation between Ada and Asher?
The entire time was a conversation, sir.
And was it basically, what, can you tell me what that conversation was?
About from Ada to halfway to Asher, it was just my trying to reaffirm him that I wasn't going to kill him to calm his nerves. And then from that point on, we was talking on our upbringings, our past, our family histories, things of more philosophical nature, etc., etc.
As Gennaro drove, he pleaded with Jared for his life. However, his pleas fell on deaf ears. Jared told the officer that as they were driving at around 10 miles per hour east on Substation Road, he pointed the gun at Gennaro and shot.
I loaded the gun quickly, chambered the round quickly, shot once, missed, shot a second time, hit, jumped out of the car, went around, he was driving 10, 15 miles an hour, so it was rather slow, ran around the hood of the car, and of course it was slow when he wasn't purposefully driving. Tried to pull him out, couldn't get him out until he already had hit the tree, pulled him out there, dumped him into the... Before I dumped him into the ditch, I heard him gurgling. I'm not sure if that was a physiological or physical process after death, but I thought that he might have still lived through that somehow, because he was gurgling, so I shot him again and then shoved him down in the ditch. I then got his phone.
Okay, hang on, let's back up just a second.
Yes, sir.
You fired the first round.
Yes, sir.
And you missed.
Yes, sir.
Do you know where that round hit?
I believe it hit the top of the door, but it might have hit the window.
Did the window bust?
The window did bust, sir, but I don't remember if that was the first or the second round.
Okay. So you fired once and missed?
Yes, sir.
And you fired a second round?
Yes, sir.
And did you hit him then?
Yes, sir.
And you hit him in the head?
In the side of the head, yes, sir.
Okay, so it would have been his right hand?
It was around here, sir.
The right-hand side of his head?
Or yes, sir.
Somewhere by the ear?
Yes, sir.
And he was... The guy started veering off the road?
To the left, sir.
Okay. And that's when you got out and ran around?
Yes, sir.
And you opened the door?
Yes, sir.
And you tried to pull him out?
Yes, sir.
And so when you shot, and he was still gurgling?
Yes, sir.
So was he sitting up when you shot him in the head again?
No, sir. He was lying down on the ground.
So you pulled him out of the truck?
And just threw him on the ground, and then I heard him gurgling, so I shot him a second time.
And where did you hit him the second time?
I'm not certain, but I believe the head as well.
However, the shot missed Gennaro and smashed the window. Not wasting any more time, Jared shot once more, hitting Gennaro in the right-hand side of the head. As the pickup truck slowed down, Jared opened the passenger's door and jumped out. He ran around to the driver's side door, where he tried to pull open the door so that Gennaro would fall out into the road. However, the pickup truck rolled off the road. Jared managed to drag Gennaro out of the pickup truck, and he described how he was making a sound, and he wasn't sure whether he was dead or not. He shot him a second time in the head, and then rolled Gennaro into the ditch, and partially covered his body with leaves and sticks.
I looked to the left, and from the headlights I saw that I could still see his own shirt, so I covered him up better. And as I was finishing that, I saw the headlights from a car pulling over the hill. So I went down, and...
Which way was it coming from?
It was heading west from the east side, okay. So from the highway.
Huh.
And he was slowing down already, so I just came out as quickly as I could from behind the truck and flagged him down by waving my hands. And he asked what was going on. I told him that I had dozed off and veered off the road and couldn't get my truck unstuck.
Moments later, a car approached the area and the driver stopped and asked Jared if he needed any assistance. Jared told the concerned citizen that he had fallen asleep and asked if he could give him a ride back to his grandmother's home in Asher, to which the Good Samaritan agreed. The driver drove Jared to Asher, but once here, Jared turned around and started to walk back to the crime scene. It was miraculous that the driver didn't become Jared's second victim.
I guess I'm having a hard time understanding what you got out of it. Can you help me?
I don't really get anything out of it.
I mean, but why, if you wouldn't want to get some food or something, why did you do it? I guess is what I'm asking.
If I'm pressed to answer, I'll say it's to prove the strength of my resolve. But that's only if I'm pressed to answer.
I'm not pressing you. I'm just trying to understand.
Then I don't know why.
Okay. So it just
popped in my head. And
popped in your head.
Yes, sir.
During his interview with police, Jared said that he had no remorse for the murder and that he deserved to die for what he had done.
You know, you've done a terrible thing tonight.
Yes, sir.
You killed a young man.
Yes, sir.
Just for the simple fact of, I guess, pretty much this is safe for you.
Yes, sir.
And what do you think should happen to you?
Death sentence, sir.
And why do you think you deserve a death sentence?
An eye for an eye, sir.
Do you believe an eye for an eye?
Yes, sir.
Jared was subsequently jailed and charged with first-degree murder. During the court hearing, District Attorney Richard Smotherman said, "Justice needs to be quick. The manner in which he committed the crime is horrifying, and justice needs to be served. It was a random, senseless murder just to gratify the defendant." Bail for Jared was denied, and the next court hearing was scheduled for the 8th of January 2013. As Jared was being led away from court, he briefly spoke with a KOCO reporter.
Anything to say for yourself today?
No, ma'am.
Any reason why you might have done this to this young man?
No, ma'am.
No reason?
No, ma'am.
You have nothing to say for yourself?
No, ma'am.
You want to tell the community anything?
No, ma'am.
Did you confess to police?
Yes, ma'am.
Are you proud of what you've done?
No, ma'am.
Do you have remorse for what you've done?
No, ma'am.
The details of the murder painted a very disturbing picture, and the calm and collected manner in which Jared relayed what he had done was chilling. The way he spoke about Gennaro gave the impression that Jared didn't even look at him like a fellow human being, but as a source of entertainment. Swanson Health has been producing quality vitamins and supplements, foods, health, home, and self-care products for over 50 years from the heart of America. I'm lucky enough that they've sponsored this episode of Morbidology. Swanson Health are the only company to offer the full spectrum of wellness products for mind, body, and home. They have a massive range of quality vitamins and supplements, as well as cruelty-free beauty items, including makeup, shampoos, and face washes. They also have eco-friendly home products. In fact, they carry over 20,000 wellness products at a great value, and all of their brand vitamins and supplements are crafted in the USA and made with unsurpassed purity and potency. My personal favourites have got to be their CBD Full Spectrum Soft Gel Tablets, which deliver 15 milligrams of CBD, their multivitamins with iron, which deliver 16 essential vitamins and minerals in one tablet. I've also tried a variety of face washes and moisturizers that leave my skin feeling fresh. So if you'd like to try any of Swanson Health's great products for yourself, use the promo code MORBID20 for 20% off at swanson.com. It's common knowledge that stress weakens our immune system. Reset are an amazing holistic, science-based supplement formulated to balance all three body systems that manage stress: nervous, endocrine, and immune. Reset takes a holistic approach to stress management and are vegan, GMO-free, caffeine-free, melatonin-free, and made in the USA. There are specific ingredients such as passionflower, chamomile, and valerian root that help support a strong immune system. I've personally tried the 14-day Reset trial, and honestly, it worked wonders for me. I tried both their Calm product, which reduced any daytime nerves I had about meetings, and their Unwind product, which was perfect after a long day of writing and meeting deadlines. What's amazing about their product as well is that it's aesthetically pleasing and smells and tastes amazing. You can also head on over to their website, which is linked below, for their email program, where they teach easy tips to improve your stress response. For example, did you know that there is a science behind why petting a dog makes you feel more relaxed? If you would like to try Reset Yourself, you can head to Target.com, which is running a special in the month of June 2020, or order them on Reset.com. That is R3SET.com, with a 10% discount for my listeners, which will last until 2021. Just enter promo code Morbidology. Take control of your stress today. Gennaro was born on the 7th of August, 1994, to Marco Sanchez and Gianna Waldrop in McAllister, Oklahoma. He spent his childhood in Stuart, where he graduated from Stuart High School in 2012. While in the 8th grade, Gennaro had been nominated by teachers and staff into the book Who's Who in Academic Achievement. He was a freshman at East Central University, where he was studying to be an engineer. Gennaro loved learning and loved being a student at the university. When he saw his parents, he never once complained about problems at school. In 2012, he was honoured by East Central University, Seminole State College, and First United Bank and Trust as an Oklahoma top male senior class leader. Additionally, he was a Seminole State College Dean Scholarship, an East Central University Foundation Scholarship, and a 2012 Stuart Alumni Scholarship. He was affectionately known by his loved ones as G and was an honor roll student as well as a keen member of the Quiz Bowl team. He had been awarded numerous awards over the years for scholastics. Gennaro loved nothing more than spending time with his friends and family and was full of life. He had big ambitions and hopes and dreams and was determined to make an impact on the world. He was remembered by his classmates and others as a pleasant young man who would always go out of his way to help others in any way possible. According to Evan Joliffe, who was one of his classmates, he was a nice guy, always looking for us to smile and stuff. He never wanted us to be unhappy. He was a good guy, a good friend. Gennaro thoroughly enjoyed going to the movies, especially with his father. A family man through and through, Gennaro would always make sure to sleep over at his grandmother's house at least once a week to keep her company.
He was the type that he would come up and give me hugs. I love you, Nonny. I love you.
It goes without saying that Gennaro's death completely traumatized his family. His mother, Gianna, said just days after the shooting that she had yet to watch a TV report or read a news story on the murder.
He had so many dreams and aspirations. I'm going to miss my son crawling in bed with me just to watch TV or to talk about his girlfriend or to talk about school. I'm not going to be able to hold my baby and kiss him goodnight or kiss him goodbye as he goes back off to school. It's great to know that so many people besides us love my son. And I'm very, very thankful for them, because without them, I don't know how I'd be able to get through this. It's definitely my parents' worst nightmare. I hope and pray that no one ever has to endure what we are having to endure.
She briefly spoke with the Oklahoman and told them that just days before Gennaro's murder, he had told her that he had been walking down the hill at college back towards his dorm room from the classroom when he just stopped and looked around. He told his mother that he just thought, "Wow, this is beautiful, and I've got my whole life ahead of me." On the 12th of December 2012, Gennaro's friends and family packed in to the Harold Leister Gymnasium in Stuart to pay their final respects. Gennaro was subsequently buried at White Chimney Cemetery in Stuart. Following Jared's arrest, many were desperate to know more about the man who senselessly killed his classmate. A number of Jared's other classmates said that Jared was somewhat peculiar. He was known for walking around campus in a black suit and a cane, despite the fact that he didn't need a cane. He was quiet and easy to pick up in a crowd due to his unique dress sense. Jared mostly kept to himself, was quiet, and often ate lunch on his own. Apparently, over the course of the past month, Jared had attempted to get other students to drive him to Walmart, which indicated that Gennaro was very likely not the first student that Jared had targeted. Evan Jolliffe, who knew both Jared and Gennaro, said, "He asked me, my roommate, and my friend to take him to Walmart, but we didn't. It's kind of scary." As it transpired, Jared was quite the fantasist. He had told a number of students that the US Department of Defense was funding his education. It would soon be revealed that in October, before the murder, Jared had gotten into an altercation with another student in his dorm room, Wyatt Freeman. Jared, Wyatt, Gennaro, and another student had been playing Mario Kart shortly before the altercation ensued. Jared had been talking about his proficiency in martial arts and claimed that he would never tap out, even if he were faced with a life or death situation. He claimed that he would rather die than tap out if he were in a fight. Wyatt said, "Okay, let's see how committed you are to your martial arts." And Jared agreed to be placed into a chokehold, which resulted in Jared temporarily passing out. After he regained consciousness, things turned violent and Jared attacked Wyatt, punching him in the face and spitting on him.
While we were in front of the RA, he tried to hit me again, and the RA had to step in and keep us from fighting anymore. There was something really weird about Jared, and that he had finally snapped, and I didn't want to let it sit and fester anymore. I wanted to deal with it.
He talked about building bombs all the time, and he talked about killing people all the time.
Eventually, campus police were called, and they took statements from all three men, including Gennaro, who signed a statement which confirmed Wyatt's version of events. He described how when Jared fell to the floor, he began convulsing and claimed that he had memory loss due to lack of oxygen. According to Gennaro's statement, Wyatt then insists that Jared was full of it. Jared then yells and lunges at Wyatt, punching him in the temple and spitting on him. When campus police arrived, Wyatt told them that he was afraid of Jared and that he wanted him moved out of the dorm, or at least away from his dorm room, adding that he was convinced that Jared would attempt to blow him up and that he had an anarchist manual in his dorm room. According to university spokeswoman Amy Ford, at the time, they didn't think anything of the incident. As she said, it was nothing unusual, you know, for young guys in a college dorm. Other than this, however, there was nothing in Jared's background to indicate that he was capable of such a senseless crime. In his hometown of Asher, Police Chief Tommy Greggs was quick to publicly state that Jared had never been in trouble with the law. Asher is a small town where practically all of the locals knew one another, and Jared, with his black suit, cane, and fedora, stood out easily in the small town. Jared was extremely intelligent, and as far as discipline issues or violence issues or anything like that, we never had any problems with Jared, said Asher Public School Superintendent Terry Grissom, which was where Jared had attended high school before college. However, following Jared's arrest, he told investigators that the gun he had used had been stolen from a man named Daniel Davis, who lived in Asher.
I stole it 2 weeks ago from a man named Daniel Davis, 217 North Division Street.
Now, where's Division Street?
If you're going down Old 18 and entering Asher.
What town is it in?
Asher, Oklahoma.
And his name's Daniel Davis?
Yes.
And how did you steal it from his house?
I went into his house. His family and my family are on good terms. I just walked in the door and went back to his mother's room and told her that I had a video game to return to Daniel. Then I went into Daniel's room, put a video game that I brought with me as a way to get into the door, and got the gun.
When word of Jared's arrest reached his family, they could not grasp what had happened. His sister, Kristen Murray, posted on Facebook, "I'm really at a loss for words about the entire situation. I don't even know what to think right now, let alone what to say. I will say this though, I never ever thought in a million years that one of my brothers could or would ever do something even remotely close to this." On Christmas Eve, an investigator working on the case revealed that Jared may have planned to commit more murders. On the night of the murder, Jared had told his roommate that he had reached or accomplished Objective A, which led investigators to theorize that he had planned out other objectives to be reached or accomplished. According to an investigator, homicide suspects oftentimes make lists or documentation on pre-planned crimes in order not to forget details. According to the roommate, Shane Schroth, Jared had told him around 2 weeks earlier that he wanted or needed some ammunition. In early January of 2013, Jared's preliminary hearing was expected to be scheduled in court. However, when he appeared, he didn't have a lawyer present, so the matter had to be postponed. It was subsequently announced that Jared would be represented through the Oklahoma Indigent Defense System, and his case was set for scheduled hearing on the 29th of January. During the hearing, Jared pleaded not guilty to the murder of Gennaro, and he was ordered to stand trial on the 6th of December, almost a year to the day that he killed Gennaro. It was announced in April that prosecutors would be seeking the death penalty against Jared. In a bill of particulars filed, District Attorney Richard Smotherman wrote that the killing was especially heinous, atrocious, and cruel, and that because of this reason, Jared deserved to die. The document read in part, "While Gennaro Sanchez was driving and begging Jared Murray not to take his life, the defendant shot Gennaro Sanchez twice in the head. The vehicle left the roadway, crashing into a tree, at which time Jared Murray went around to the driver's side of the vehicle, pulled the victim out of the vehicle and onto the ground and shot him a third time in the head. Jared Murray then pushed the victim's body down into a ditch, covering him with leaves and sticks, and leaving Gennaro Sanchez to languish and die." Shortly after the announcement, Jared waived his right to a preliminary hearing. During a preliminary hearing, a judge determines whether there's enough evidence to warrant a trial. In this case, Jared probably cut his losses and knew all too well that his videotaped confession was damning. This meant that the case would go straight to trial. However, shortly thereafter, Jared appeared in court once again, where his attorney asked for a preliminary hearing. District Judge John Canavan sent the case back to the special district judges for a preliminary hearing, which was scheduled for the 10th of May. During the preliminary hearing, Jared's confession was played out in court. The room was silent when midway through the confession, when Jared was explaining that he picked Gennaro because he didn't have many friends, Gennaro's father stood up in court, interrupting the hearing. Deputies escorted him out, and District Attorney Richard Smotherman later said, "It was very emotional and difficult for them to hear from the defendant's own mouth the moments leading up to their child's death. As you heard earlier, the confession was extremely chilling, and Gennaro's family were evidently struggling with what they were hearing." During the confession, Jared had told Officer Palmer that he had tried to calm Gennaro down during the drive from Ada to Asher by telling him that he wasn't going to kill him. The taped confession got to the part where Jared told Officer Palmer that he had pulled Gennaro from the pickup truck after he shot him and heard him gurgling, so shot him once again. D.A. Smotherman then approached the laptop that the confession was emanating from, stopped the video, and told the judge, "I believe we have met the burden of probable cause." Officer Palmer took to the stand to testify on Jared's demeanor during the interviews. He described Jared as being cold and callous, even adding, "He has no emotion whatsoever." The judge ruled that there was sufficient evidence for Jared to go on trial for first-degree murder. However, he was ordered to undergo a competency evaluation before the case proceeded any further. Jared was subsequently found competent to stand trial. He was ordered back to court for a disposition hearing where he would have the opportunity to enter a new plea. However, in August of 2014, it was announced that D.A. Smotherman requested a delay so that Jared could be examined by an independent forensic psychologist. Furthermore, Jared's attorney indicated that they would be raising insanity as a defense. In October, Jared appeared in court once more, where he said that he would not be changing his plea from not guilty. Then in July of 2015, Jared was scheduled to be back in court, where it would be determined whether he was not guilty by reason of insanity. Two doctors would be testifying on the question of whether he was not guilty by reason of insanity, and then the court must decide the issue. The question of whether somebody could be found not guilty due to insanity hinged on the person's mental state when they carried out the murder. During the hearing, the judge ruled that Jared was not guilty by reason of insanity. As it turned out, both the defense and the prosecution experts concluded that Jared could not comprehend between right and wrong, meaning that he was insane in the eyes of the law. By this point in the case, very little information about Jared's mental state had been publicly released. However, in court, it was revealed that Jared had suffered from delusions and believed that he was the king of the world and that he saw and could speak to ghosts. A psychologist who had been hired by the prosecution concluded that Jared suffered from a severe mental illness, either bipolar disorder or a schizoaffective disorder, bipolar type. According to psychologist Sean Robertson, Jared had extensive grandiose and delusional beliefs. While he knew that the murder was illegal, he had come to the conclusion that it was required that he must kill somebody. He detailed how Jared had chosen Gennaro as his victim based on perceptions of his role in the world, a world in which Jared viewed himself as the king. Psychologist Robertson had even noted that Jared had told one investigator about his motive, stating, "I don't know why, it just popped into my head." The defense expert reported that Jared had considered suicide in November of 2012 following the death of his grandfather. However, he then decided that he would kill somebody else. According to psychologist Therese Hall, his explanation of his thinking at the time is quite irrational. He explains he thought he was receiving stage directions that a life had to be taken. He would mediate and the thought of death would come to him, making him feel light and good. Jared had called himself a creature of impulse, and according to psychologist Hall, he had bragged about devising a new energy source which would make him rich. She concluded that at the time of the murder, Jared was suffering from an untreated mental illness, which was characterized by serious mood and psychotic symptoms, and that he had been suffering from delusions of being directed to kill somebody. Jared was committed to the Oklahoma Forensic Center, and it was ordered that he could not be released until a judge agreed that he was no longer a danger to society. The judge scheduled the hearing for the 26th of August to review Jared's current mental state. He said that he empathized with Gennaro's family and wished that there was more that he could have done, but he was required to follow the law. When Jared was asked if he had anything to say, he replied with, "No, sir." His appearance during the hearing was a stark difference to when he was arrested. Beforehand, he was more heavy set, but now he was extremely gaunt and frail-looking. D.A. Smotherman said that he hoped that Jared's case would prompt legislators to change the law so that in future cases, mentally ill defendants, such as Jared, could be found guilty but insane. He suggested that a judge should be able to order treatment for the same amount of time a sane convict would serve in prison after being found guilty of a similar crime. He said that if the convicted were found guilty but insane, they could be transferred to prison if they ever regain their sanity. Under Oklahoma law at the time, defendants are considered not guilty by reason of insanity if they are unable to distinguish right from wrong at the time of their crime. They're also considered not guilty by reason of insanity if they do not understand the nature and consequences of their actions. While this was now determined to be the case with Jared, such cases are extremely rare in Oklahoma. Medical experts must weigh all elements of the defendant's background and then decide whether the evidence supports an insanity finding. Outside of court, D.A. Smotherman spoke to reporters and said that Gennaro's family didn't get justice today, the system failed them today, and the laws of the state of Oklahoma failed them today, because he's been found not guilty. He's not being held accountable. This is a ludicrous result. D.A. Smotherman also said that as long as he is district attorney, he would argue against Jared's release from the state psychiatric hospital. He said, "You will never convince me that this man is not a danger to society. Today, tomorrow, 5 years from now, 50 years from now. This was the most chilling confession I've ever seen in 25 years of doing this job. When I watched his confession the night of the murder, it scared the hell out of me because there was nothing but a blank look in his eyes as he answered the questions. Gennaro's mother, Gianna, also called for a change in the law. I want something to be changed, and the only way to do this is for lawmakers to put themselves in my shoes and think that if it were their child, how they would have felt hearing the judge say, "I'm sorry, but there's nothing that I can do but go by the letter of the law." Jared's next court hearing was scheduled for August, where it would be determined whether he was considered a danger to others. However, when August came around, it was announced that the court hearing was postponed until September after D.A. Smotherman said that the experts who had evaluated him in the Oklahoma Forensic Center would not have their reports ready on time. During September's hearing, experts would have determined how long Jared would have to remain at the psychiatric hospital. However, this hearing was also delayed due to the fact that the doctors who had examined him disagreed on whether he posed a danger to others or not. One of the experts concluded that Jared was not mentally ill, which was a finding that could require the Oklahoma Forensic Center to release Jared if the court agreed. According to psychologist Peter Rausch, Jared had denied that he had any psychiatric problems, and the only overt sign of mental illness that he exhibited was pressured speech. In his report, he wrote that Jared had voiced some ideas that could be considered odd, but said that they were not delusional. For example, Jared believed that all events were predetermined by God. Psychologist Rausch concluded that Jared's history suggested a mental illness, but he was not currently showing any substantial signs of mental illness. He wrote in his report, "Therefore, he does not presently meet the statutory criteria as being presently mentally ill." However, the second expert said that Jared was mentally ill and posed a threat to public safety and needed additional treatment. According to psychiatrist Joseph Errico, he had reached the conclusion that Jared had a history of mental illness, which included symptoms of responding to internal stimuli, grandiose delusions, possible manic episodes, and odd behavior. In his report, he wrote that the symptoms indicated possible schizotypical personality disorder, which is a mental condition in which sufferers have trouble with relationships and disturbances in thought patterns, appearance, and behavior. He diagnosed Jared as either having a bipolar mood disorder with psychotic features or a schizoaffective disorder, bipolar type. A bipolar mood disorder with psychotic features is characterized by unusually euphoric or agitated moods, alongside depression or a mix of extremely high and extremely low moods. Psychotic symptoms are also part of the disorder, and they can severely affect the sufferer's ability to function. Schizoaffective disorders are characterized by a combination of schizophrenia symptoms, including hallucinations and signs of a mood disorder, such as mania or depression. Psychiatrist Errico concluded his report by stating that he had reached the conclusion that Jared was presently considered dangerous to the public peace and safety, and that he should remain at the Oklahoma Forensic Center for treatment. Due to the conflicting reports, D.A. Smotherman asked Judge John Canavan Jr. to appoint two new doctors to examine Jared in the hopes that they could reach a consensus on whether he was mentally ill or not, and then prepare reports for the court. Defense attorney Mitchell Solomon did not challenge the request, and two new doctors were appointed. In November, the two replacement doctors reached the same conclusion, that Jared was still mentally ill and would return to the Oklahoma Forensic Center for an indefinite stay. According to psychiatrist Dr. Stanley Ordoin, Jared still had a serious mental illness that was unlikely to be adequately controlled in the community. In another report, Dr. Sean Robertson said that he asked Jared if he knew a similar incident would not happen if he were released, to which he replied, "I don't." If they had both have agreed that he wasn't mentally ill, then Jared would have been released a free man. During the hearing, a man testified that when he had been in a cell block with Jared, he had overheard Jared making threats about Gennaro's family. According to John Gibson, he said that he would do it again. Jared's attorney cross-examined John about his credibility and asked if anybody else had overheard Jared making the alleged threats. According to John, others had heard the threats as well, but he couldn't remember their names. Gennaro's mother had attended the hearing, and outside, she said that she was satisfied that Jared was not released. However, she said that she still opposed to the law that allowed him to be found not guilty by reason of insanity. She said, "Nobody should be able to use mental illness as an excuse to get out of serving time for their crime, especially a murderer." Following the hearing, D.A. Smotherman said that he had drafted legislation for lawmakers to consider next year that would create a new criminal disposition of guilty but insane, which was similar to statutes in 12 other states. The proposal would mean that defendants could be held accountable for their crimes by allowing for both mental health treatment and punishment. According to D.A. Smotherman, "Nobody has been held accountable for this crime. He has been found not guilty of a murder he has confessed to, and that's a significant problem." With Jared sent back to the psychiatric hospital, many still knew very little about the man who had committed such a senseless crime. Soon enough, details about Jared's life came to the surface. It goes without saying that five-year-olds can often exhibit unpredictable behavior. However, when Jared was 5 years old, he attempted to end his own life. He had attempted to hang himself, but was found by his brother unconscious on the ground because the knot didn't hold. This disturbing event was just the beginning of a long history of peculiar behavior that would culminate with the murder of Gennaro. In March, the bill proposed by D.A. Smotherman took a decisive step towards law. By a 41-0 vote, the state Senate passed the bill, sending it to the House for consideration. The bill would add a guilty but with mental defect defense for individuals found guilty with a mental illness, but who also have an antisocial personality disorder. They kill people just to kill them. They hurt people just because they like to hurt people. And those sort of people, they don't deserve to be in a mental hospital. They deserve to be in prison because they are bad, bad people, said D.A. Smotherman. The following month, the House approved the bill and sent it back to the Senate to review minor House changes to the measure. Then the following month, the Senate gave unanimous final approval to legislation that would create the new defense for those suffering with mental illness. Under the new law, defendants could be found guilty but insane, which meant that they would be sent to prison to serve their sentence, but they would also be given treatment for their mental illness. The new bill became law on the 1st of November 2016.
We decided to create a threshold where someone can be found not guilty by reason of insanity and give the prosecutor the opportunity to argue that they're not guilty by reason of insanity, but instead say they're guilty with a mental defect.
There is a massive difference between being mentally ill and having a mental illness that completely impairs your judgment. There are millions of people with mental illnesses that are not violent and would never dream of harming anybody. Far too often, mental illness can be used as a catch-all explanation as to why somebody has committed murder. While the new law in Oklahoma was a step forward, the struggle to align the law with psychiatric knowledge is probably still in vain. There is always going to be a struggle for the balance. In the aftermath of the new law taking effect, Gennaro's mother, Gianna, said that this was a small victory. She knows that in the future, violent criminals such as Jared will be sent to prison for their crimes for a long period and receive treatment for their mental illness, instead of being sent to a psychiatric hospital for a period that ends when they are considered sane. As mentioned earlier, sometimes this sentence can be just a few months. "I'm pleased that something positive can come from something negative," said Gianna. Jared still remains in the Oklahoma Forensic Center. He will remain here until he is considered sane. He will never serve a day in prison. In 2017, Jared tried to be released from the psychiatric hospital. He filed a motion asking the court to consider his release, but the motion was denied. According to the judge, Jared makes progress while on his medication, but as soon as that medication stops, he becomes worse. The judge noted that Jared seemingly makes his own determination of whether or not he needs medication. Additionally, Jared had been making statements that he wasn't sure whether he would ever hurt somebody again if released. Out of the 200 patients at the Oklahoma Forensic Center, the doctor testified that Jared was the most dangerous. According to D.A. Smotherman, he will always fight any chance Jared has of ever being released.
He may not be held accountable for my son's murder, but like God forbid he ever get out, he will never be able to do something like that again and get away with it. This helps because now people will see that his life had meaning as well as his death.
The murder of Gennaro Sanchez was as senseless as they can come. According to his family, Gennaro always saw the good in people, and on that fateful night, when Jared Murray asked for a lift to Walmart, Gennaro very likely believed that this was an olive branch. To let bygones be bygones. Never in a million years did he expect to be taken out to a lonely road and shot dead while trying to do a good deed. Gennaro's death was not in vain, however, because it led to a change in Oklahoma's outdated insanity defense. The fact that following Jared's arrest, he said that somebody who kills another person should die should have been evidence enough that he knew fully well that what he was doing was wrong. He could differentiate between wrong and right, and if the insanity defense law had been amended before Gennaro's murder, then maybe, just maybe, Jared would be sitting in prison where he belongs. Well, guys, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so much for listening. I'd like to say a massive thank you to my new Patreon supporters, Jasmine Lamore, Eileen from Crime Labs, and Emily Ford. I am eternally grateful for your support. If you'd like to support the show in return for exclusive episodes of Morbidology Plus, early release episodes, ad-free episodes, and of course my undying love, then check out Morbidology on Patreon or Himalaya Plus. The links are in the show notes. There was a brand new episode of Morbidology Plus on those last week. Can I ask that if you enjoy Morbidology, please consider voting for me for the Listener's Choice Award at the British Podcast Awards. I've included a link in the show notes, and it's as easy as just typing Morbidology into the search bar. I know a little indie podcast like Morbidology won't stand a chance against all the big boys, but hey, if you don't ask, you don't get. Big thank you to everybody who has simply listened to an episode, commented on an episode. The support is very much appreciated. Also, make sure you visit us at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read our true crime articles. And stay tuned to the end of this episode to hear a promo for the amazing podcast, Our Strange Skies. Until next time, take care of yourself, stay safe, and have an amazing week.
Since 1947, people from all walks of life have reported seeing strange objects in the skies all over the world. And on the Our Strange Skies podcast, we share those stories of close encounters, UFO flaps, and alien abductions. We do it with a splash of humor and with a space pancake or two. Check us out every other Friday on your podcast player of choice or at OurStrangeSkies.com. In Gray, we trust.